Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March 29th, 2024. It has been 3,714 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 38 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 35 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Thursday and Friday morning. I have a lot to report, and I suggest hiding your favorite coffee mug before listening today. You might end up throwing it across the room, and I don't want that. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are small map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. We further assess that the inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance by Washington significantly contributed to this latest incident. 2. Our assessment that Free Russian Liberation Forces had ended their operations in the Kursk and Belgorod regions of Russia was inaccurate. 3. Russia is taking advantage of the United States' inertia to restart its campaign to destroy Ukraine's electrical infrastructure and is having significant success. 4. The filing of a motion to vacate against Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and the April 19th resignation of Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher has created a window of opportunity that could move U.S. military aid for Ukraine forward. 5. In our assessment, Ukraine has suspended its systematic targeting of Russia's oil refining capability, likely due to pressure from the United States. 6. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies, and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 7. The second phase of the Russian 2024 winter offensive has reached its culmination point, and Russia is preparing for a summer offensive. 8. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. We start today's report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts. International Atomic Energy Agency IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi reported that on March the 22nd, power was lost at the subcritical neutron source installation at the Kharkiv Institute of Physics and Technology due to a Russian missile attack. On February 24, 2022, the research reactor was brought to a subcritical state, and most radioactive material was removed. Previously, Russian forces have hit the facility with bombs, missiles, and rockets, causing significant damage. On-site emergency diesel generators were circulating coolant. Grossi said, quote, "Due to the nature of this facility, which has been shut down since the start of the armed conflict, we do not currently anticipate a situation that could have any implications to public safety. But clearly, leaving a nuclear installation without off-site power is not normal, and once again demonstrates the risks from this war to nuclear safety." Unquote. In Luhansk Oblast, fighting continued near Terny and Bilohorivka, with no change in the situation. Moving to the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Bakhmut area, Russian forces made a significant attempt to bypass Ivanivske from the north in the direction of Chasiv Yar. There weren't any significant advances, but the situation is difficult. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported that fighting continued in the, quote, eastern part of Ivanivka, but did not make any claims of a successful counteroffensive. In the Klishivka AO, GSAFU reported fighting continued in the areas of Klishivka and Andriivka, with no change in the situation. In the Toretsk-New York AO, we continue to receive reports of fighting in the Shumy and Pivdenne areas, on the edge of Horlivka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continued their attacks in the Avdiivka AO at a lower intensity due to a short-term lack of resources. Attacks are mostly comprised of squad-sized units of light infantry supported by infantry fighting vehicles, IFV, or armored personnel carriers. Fighting continued on a line from Berdyche to Semenivka to east of Umanske, ending in the center of Tonenke. Russian sources reported fighting was ongoing in Pervomayske and in the area of Nevelske. The commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, Colonel General Oleksandr Sirsky, reported that only 25 Ukrainian soldiers were captured during the February withdrawal from Avdiivka. From February the 17th to the 21st, Russian sources shared two different videos showing the capture of five soldiers. The heaviest fighting in Ukraine continues to be in the settlement of Novomikhailivka in the Vuhledar AO. Ukrainian forces made a small but tactically significant advance east of Georgievka on the northern bank of the fishing ponds. The line of conflict was adjusted and the gray area was reduced. We made a small change to the line of conflict and the gray area south of Novomikhailivka based on new intelligence. The situation remains very difficult. In the Staromlinivka AO, GSAFU reported that a Russian attack northwest of Priyutne was repulsed. In occupied Mariupol, Russia's attempt to cover up its war crimes... In occupied Mariupol, Russia's attempt to restore the drama theater ended up causing more damage. The front facade, the only part to survive the March 16, 2022 bombing by the VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, partially collapsed. 8 of 9 sculptures were destroyed. Russian occupiers still intend to destroy the Viktor Arnautov mosaic Conquerors of Space on the damaged House of Communications building. The artwork, created in 1964, celebrates Russia's cosmonauts and space program, and demolition of the House of Communications has already started. In Zaporizhia Oblast, Russian probing attacks continued in the Orikhiv AO. Positional fighting restarted northwest of Verbove and continued south of Robotyne. There has been no significant change in the situation. Russian mercenary mail blogger Wogonzo reported there had been a significant increase in Ukrainian artillery fire. The IAEA released an update on the status of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, ZNPP. Director General Grossi made a surprisingly direct statement, saying, quote, "The conflict is continuing to endanger nuclear safety and security in Ukraine, with military activity taking place near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. For more than 2 years now, nuclear safety and security in Ukraine has been in constant jeopardy." Unquote. Quick sidebar. Have you ever noticed how Grossi never specifies exactly who is putting ZNPP in constant jeopardy? IAEA inspectors at ZNPP reported that they heard explosions every day this week. Several times, the sounds of outgoing artillery fire, quote, "appeared to come from near the site," unquote. Nearby small arms fire was heard during the night of March the 22nd and the 27th. Let me help the IAEA out. The small arms fire you heard was from the Nikopol Rayon trying to shoot down Russian drones, and the outgoing artillery you heard is being fired at Nikopol. Back to the report. The IAEA was able to inspect reactor 5 and did not find any indications of oil, water or boric acid leaks. A walkthrough of the turbine hall for Unit 4, which remains in hot shutdown, and an inspection of its safety systems was also completed. Grossi acknowledged a video that circulated on social media showing, quote, "the presence of troops and vehicles inside one of the turbine halls at the ZNPP," unquote, and that the IAEA was previously aware of their presence. Here's what happened in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea, Mykolaiv and Odessa. Operational Command South reported that a Russian Black Sea Fleet Kilo-class submarine capable of launching 4 Kalibr cruise missiles was on patrol. It was the first warship to leave a Russian control port in weeks. A Russian Su-27 multi-role fighter was accidentally shot down by Russian air defenses shortly after taking off from Belbek military airfield near Sevastopol. Russian officials claim the pilot safely ejected and was recovered from the Black Sea. There were multiple videos from different angles that captured the event, and none of them showed that the pilot had ejected. We'll link to the videos in today's situation report, and there is more information in the podcast description. There was another large-scale missile and drone attack, and here is what we know about the situation in central, western and northern Ukraine. Russia targeted civilian infrastructure, again, in the latest attack, striking 3 power plants. At the tech facility in the Dnipropetrovsk region was reported as damaged. NASA Fire Information for Resource Management Systems indicated that the northwestern edge of the Dniproenergo-Kryvyi-Rih thermal power plant compound was hit, but not in an area with critical infrastructure. In breaking news, Dnipropetrovsk officials reported that power and water service had already been restored at the time of recording. The tech also reported that a power plant in Poltava was hit and suffered, quote, serious damage. At the time of recording, there was no information about blackouts. Officials in the Lviv oblast reported that 2 Kh-47 Kinzhal air-to-surface ballistic missiles hit critical infrastructure. Power outages weren't reported. On March the 22nd, Russia attacked the underground Naftogaz gas storage site near Lviv, which was reported as a strike on critical infrastructure. After Russian autocrat Vladimir Putin said that the number of missile and drone strikes on civilians would increase, the Kyiv City Military Administration held a meeting in the Defense Council. Restrictions on public events and large gatherings, and increased checks of documents and IDs in areas critical to the city will be implemented. Renewed inspections of bomb shelters to ensure they are left unlocked, and the stock level at points of invincibility will be done. The administration will also start additional monitoring of social media networks for disinformation, provocations, and sharing of information to help Russia with target selection and battle damage assessment. Overnight, a lot happened in Poland, Moldova, and Romania. Romanian officials reported that debris from an apparent Shahed 136 one-way drone was found in Insula Mare Ebrailei, 23 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. The strike comes a day after the United States said that NATO was committed to, let me check my notes, defending every inch of its airspace. 23 kilometers is 905,512 inches. Local residents published videos consistent with the sound of a Shahed 136 and reported a bright flash. Romanian officials confirmed that drone debris had been found, and video showed there was a significant response at the site. In our assessment, with final confirmation that the debris is a Shahed 136, this can't have been hit by Ukrainian air defense this deep into Romania, and this was not a programming error by Russia. During the same air raid on Ukraine, the Polish Air Force scrambled F-16s, and the United States deployed a KC-135 refueling aircraft due to a Russian missile attack. No violations of Polish airspace were reported. There were also multiple reports that 2 Russian missiles crossed into Moldovan airspace, but at the time of recording, we could not confirm the veracity of the claims. The ambassador of the Russian Federation to Poland returned to Moscow on March the 26th, 2 days after he snubbed the Polish Foreign Ministry. Ambassador Sergei Andreev was summoned on March the 24th to explain why a Russian cruise missile entered Polish airspace on March the 22nd, and was a no-show, declaring that Poland had provided insufficient evidence and there was nothing to discuss. Poland clarified that it had not expelled the ambassador, and the Russian Foreign Ministry did not report he was being recalled. Following an inquiry, the Russian embassy reported he would be absent through April the 4th, although his departure was not previously announced. Significant progress in resolving the trade dispute between Poland and Ukraine was reported, with the two nations agreeing to control border checkpoints jointly, and Poland agreeing to provide licensing requirements for certain Ukrainian agricultural products. The European Commission is expected to approve the measures and consider a ban on the import of grain from Russia and Belarus. Both parties indicated they were happy with the agreement and progress. The State Border Guard Service of Ukraine reported that Polish protesters ended their blockade of the Uhryniew-Dolhobychyv checkpoint. Traffic was operating normally, with the pro-Moscow-backed protesters indicating they would return on April the 2nd. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is on a new comedy tour. Speaking with Russian state media, he said that the Kremlin wasn't ruling out that Moldova was preparing a, quote, military solution to the Transnistrian problem, unquote. Lavrov cited Moldova abandoning any future discussions on the proposed 5-2 format for negotiations. Just a reminder, Moldova has no air force, no air defenses, a handful of museum pieces of armored vehicles and artillery, and a token defense force of approximately 6,000. Here is the situation on the Russian front. Our analyst team has an errors and omissions statement. On March the 26th, we assessed that Free Russian Liberation Forces had ended their operations in the Belgorod and Kursk regions of Russia, based on a lack of information, the significant drop of cross-border shelling, and the wording used in the most recent statements made by the Freedom of Russia Legion. We were wrong, and we thank you for your understanding, as we cut through the fog of war. This is what we could verify in the Belgorod region. In the Grivoroneyo, Free Russian Liberation Forces continued to occupy parts of Kozinka, where fighting against pro-Putin forces was ongoing. We geolocated the most recent video they released. Pro-Putin Chechen Ahmad forces made a TikTok-grade video in Gorkovsky at the remains of the Gorky School of Secondary Education, days after Free Russian Liberation Forces withdrew. In the video, one of the Chechens said, quote, "Real men fight like this," while not fighting anyone. The video shows that the Russian VKS destroyed the school. No Free Russian Liberation Forces or Ukrainians were harmed in the latest Ramzan Kadyrov movie production. The city of Belgorod entered its 17th day of shelling, with most damage caused by falling air defense rocket debris. For the ninth time in March, a bomb accidentally fell off a Russian aircraft. A Fab 500 was found in the village of Bessonovka, southwest of Belgorod.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. On the night of March the 28th and the 29th, Russia launched the second-largest missile and drone attack of the month. 60 Shahed 136 one-way drones, 21 KH-101 555 air-to-surface cruise missiles, 9 KH-59 guided air-to-surface missiles, 3 KH-47 Kinjal air-to-surface ballistic missiles, 4 Iskander-K ballistic cruise missiles, and 2 Iskander-M short-range ballistic missiles were launched at mostly civilian targets. 11 295 MS strategic bombers, 3 MiG-31Ks, and several Su-35s carried out the attacks. Ukrainian air defenses intercepted 58 Shaheds and 26 of 38 missiles. It was initially reported that 3 power plants were seriously damaged, but as I told you earlier, it appears that the thermal power plant in Dnipropetrovsk Oblast was quickly restored. The TAC reported that the missile attack on March the 22nd destroyed all the power generation units at the Burshtynska and Ladyzhinska thermal power plants, and it will take up to a year to restore them. Before today's missile attack, in an interview with the United States news agency CBS, President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky appealed for more Patriot air defense systems, saying, quote, "Ukraine needs 5 to 7 Patriot air defense systems from the United States. It is also the protection of the country's critical infrastructure." Adding that none of the Patriot batteries in Ukraine came from the United States, but are from the inventory of other countries. He also appeared to take a swipe at U.S. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson's plan to provide additional military aid to Ukraine in the form of loans. Zelensky correctly stated that most of the presidential drawdown funds are used to replace outdated munitions and equipment, and that 75% of direct military aid dollars to Ukraine stay in the U.S. Zelensky also said that Russia was preparing to launch a new offensive in May or June, and that without new support from the United States, the situation would deteriorate further. In our assessment, Russia is preparing to launch a new, broad offensive, likely in June. Zelensky added that the Russian winter offensive, quote, did not succeed, and the situation is much better than it was 2 to 3 months ago. This aligns with our March the 11th assessment that Russia failed to achieve its October goal of capturing the rest of the Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts and was unable to expand on its operational success in Avdiivka. The Ukrainian NATO Council held an emergency meeting at the request of Ukraine. Minister of Defense Rustem Umerov attended, telling the NATO ambassadors, quote, "In 2024, 97% of Russian missiles hit civilian infrastructure. Only 3% of these Russian munitions in 2024 attacked military targets in Ukraine," unquote. Ukraine's air defenses are in a critical state due to a lack of munitions from the United States. Yesterday, President Zelensky spoke with Speaker of the House Johnson. During his evening address, Zelensky said, quote, "I informed him of the situation at the front, of the continued Russian attacks on our cities. Their terror is only getting worse and can only be stopped by the physical force of our defense. Ukraine is grateful for the support of the United States and every American who shares our belief that freedom must never lose. And it is very important that the Congress maintains its leadership so that the defense of freedom remains a unifying idea both within countries and for the global majority. Right now, it depends on our determination, our joint actions, what the world of our children will be." Unquote. The Ministry of Defense of France decided that any military hardware retired from its inventory would be sent to Ukraine. In the immediate future, that would include AMX-10 wheeled light tanks and VAB armored personnel carriers, APC. While the AMX-10 has performed poorly, the VAB carries 10 dismounts, has an operational range of 1,200 km and a top speed of 110 km per hour. The APCs have received several upgrades, including to its armor, and its amphibious design unintentionally gave it high survivability against landmines. Germany announced a new military aid package. There are too many items to list in the podcast, but all the details are in our situation report. There is a link in the podcast description. The Czech Republic announced that it had approved an increase in self-funding of its ammunition initiative for Ukraine, but did not release additional information. Prime Minister Petr Fiala said that it was important for Ukraine to understand how many munitions it would receive in the coming, quote, weeks and months, so that it can properly plan its tactics. I like weeks much better than months. The Minister of Defense of Sweden, Paul Jonsson, confirmed that after the integration into NATO is finalized in May, the question of providing Saab JAS-39 Gripen fighter aircraft to Ukraine would be considered. Sweden is already part of the fighter jet coalition and is assisting with training and integrating the F-16 into the Ukrainian Air Force. Discussing the situation with Ukraine's air power, Jonsson called out the United States without saying names, stating that Europe must, quote, compensate for the decreasing part of this support. And that's what we know. Please join me again on Monday. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.